Hi, everybody. Welcome to Bikescape, episode number 49, March 2nd, 2008. Well, the big wheel has turned three times since Bikescape first went out on the internet. Pretty amazing. Time is flying, and yes, it's the third anniversary of Bikescape. And as we reflect how much ground got covered in the last 3 years, it's time to look forward to the next 3 years. And over the next 3 years, my next guest, Victor Weinreber, is going to be riding his bike around the entire world. He set out from Asheville, North Carolina last May and arrived in San Francisco. And believe it or not, that was just a practice ride. His ride begins here in San Francisco last January and goes all the way around the world. Just back to San Francisco in 3 or so years. Anyway, Victor shot me an email. We got together. He ended up staying with me for about a week or so while it just poured down rain here in San Francisco. It was the worst rainstorm of the decade, as it turns out. And we had some great discussions down in the basement amongst the bicycles. We're down in the basement. It's raining outside. We're kind of stuck indoors. I wanted to go on a riding interview, but we're with Victor Weinreber, and he's taking a big trip around the world. Little planet, big bike here. So say hi, everybody.
Hi, everybody.
This is just a simple question. Why do you want to ride around the world? What gets you going to do that?
Well, it beats work.
Yeah. But you had to work. You had to work really hard to get this to happen, didn't you? I mean, what? This took a lot of work to do.
Yes, of course. It's been years in the making. I've been working on it for quite some time.
What gave you the idea?
You know, I'm not really sure exactly what it was that initially triggered the idea in my head.
But one day you woke up and you decided, I'm just going to get up and build a bike and ride it around the world?
Well, the first ideas started to form shortly after 9/11. At the time, I was working on my commercial pilot's license. And obviously, at that time, that career opportunity kind of dried up.
Did it really?
Yes. So I started thinking about, well, what else do I want to do? And cycling has always been a passion of mine and love bike touring. And the idea of a long bike tour was very appealing.
And you've been riding since when?
Since I was 8 years old.
And you ride for transportation?
Transportation, recreation, you name it.
So you're one of us.
Yes. Car free for years.
Yeah. And so you, one day it just dawned on you you were gonna just leave home. And where do you live?
On the bike.
I know, but I mean, where did you live before this ride began?
I've moved around a lot. The last place I was living was in Asheville, North Carolina, in the Smoky Mountains.
And you had a house, you lived out in the country?
Yeah, what? I was running a house up on several hundred acres up on a mountainside. Now, for the locals out there, it was Bear Wallow Mountain.
So a lot of people think you can't bike commute from a house in the on 100 acres, that you have to live in the city if you're going to be a real bike commuter.
Absolutely not. I commuted by bike, and it was 10 miles each way. And I lived up on top of a mountain, quite literally. So my daily commute going home involved a 3-mile-long mountain climb to get home. Huh.
So that's great. So one day you woke up, you said, I'm gonna ride around the world. And what was the first thing you just, how did it progress from there?
Well, initially I knew that I need a new bike.
Yeah.
None of the bikes I had were up to the task. They were all older aluminum mountain bikes, and their frames were nearing the end of their lifespan because of aluminum and the fatigue life. Mm-hmm. So I knew I'd have to get a new bike. So I designed and built my own.
What does that involve? Okay, we're standing here. We went down to the bike room here in my house so we could at least be with the bike, even if we can't be outside with it. And you've got this... People use words like tank and aircraft carrier and...
And battleship, Apollo lunar capsule, you name it. I've heard all sort of names for it.
It's got a lot of stuff on it, and it's a big bike. So starting from the back, well, assuming it was all connected, you got a bob trailer.
Yes.
A lot of people know what those are, but you should describe it.
Well, it's a modified bob trailer. It's your standard bob Ibex, the one with the shock on it. And then I've built
the bob it's a trailer with one wheel, and it hooks onto your. It's got these two little hooks that hook onto your right where the nuts are on your bike.
The rear axle, yes.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. And it's basically one wheel, so when you tip the bike over, it sort of tips with you.
When I lean, it leans along with me.
Yeah.
Or more applicably in my use, when I'm weaving around potholes in Cambodia, it'll follow a straight line. I can weave through those potholes without having to...
Unlike a two-wheel trailer.
Exactly, yeah. Like a Burley, it'd be bouncing through the potholes.
And you can weave through traffic on city streets, too.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's good for that also.
That's what I use it for, and they're good for camping. You know, they're great trailers just for everyday use.
They are, and that's what I used back in North Carolina for commuting. Mm-hmm. That's how I hauled my groceries and my firewood.
Should do a show just about trailers one day. That's another idea. So, okay, you have the fancy one that's got the shocks on it.
With a shock, yep. I got to keep the jarring on the laptop to a minimum. Uh-huh. But I've also built my own Kevlar composite hard box for it.
It's about 2.5 feet tall, sticking out of the top.
Yep, it's about 1.5 inches longer than my tent poles.
Uh-huh.
Yep, and it's a single locking lid on the top.
And it's waterproof, I guess?
Fully waterproof, uh-huh. And it has taillights that I built into the back as well that run off a power system.
And we'll get to that. And it looks like it's got carpet on the outside, but what is that really?
Well, it looks like carpeting is actually female Velcro or hook and loop fastener.
So you can stick anything with male Velcro onto the back of it.
Exactly. So when Coca-Cola or Red Bull or McDonald's wants to sponsor me, I can slap their logo on the side. You hearing that, Red Bull?
Yeah. I don't know if I've never had any offers to. I don't have any sponsorship for Bikescape, but I've never had any offers either. I don't know how I'd react. But okay, so then you have this case that's, and you have lights on the back, really bright lights. Tell me about the lights.
Well, the lights, I actually had to wait a year after I built the bike for the lights to come on the market. They're actually MR16 LED bulbs. For those that are not very technically oriented, these are brand new LEDs, just came on the market. And this is what you want to get if you want to build your own lighting system from scratch, essentially.
You can order those on the web?
You can order them on the web, yes.
You have to give me the link for that. And you can control them from this massive, well, we'll get to that also. You have a massive control panel at the front.
Yep, that's up on the front, though. We're going from back to front, as you said.
So you have two lights on the back, and then you have an old...
No, actually, there's four lights on the back. Uh-huh. Yes, two of them are 1-watt red LEDs. Mm-hmm. One is a 5-watt red LED, and one is a 5-watt white LED.
And it's damn bright.
You can say that again.
I followed you home last night, and... You look like a truck.
And that was just a 1-watt.
Oh, uh-huh.
Yeah, you didn't see the 5-watters in operation.
Oh, I should have seen that. So, what was the theory you were talking about? The theory of big or...
Theory of big, yes. Bigger things on the road get more respect. And having lots of lights, especially really bright ones, really give you a big visual impact to the motorists.
So they may not know what you are, but they know they've got to stay out of your way.
Exactly. A good example of that. So when I'm on any road at night, essentially, and they come around a bend or over a hill, I always hear them let off the throttle as soon as they can see me. Because they don't know what I am, they just know there's something big and bright right in their path.
And probably blinding them, too.
That, too. Because also, the entire back of the trailer, that large vertical surface area, is covered in very bright reflective material as well.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, very safe and big. Yes. So it does have that. And so then, you were saying that you have to have a power system to run this thing. This isn't going to run off a dynamo. Well, you were running it off a dynamo last night. You have a dynamo and a self-contained power system as well.
Absolutely correct. The dynamo, I'll start with that. That's actually a backup system. And that's just a backup for when the batteries happen to be dead or I can't charge them for several days because I use solar power to charge everything. Mm-hmm. I built my own solar array also.
And that keeps... What kind of battery do you have?
I built the battery pack as well. Essentially, if you picture 10 D-cell nickel metal hydrides wired together in series, that gives you some idea what I've got.
Okay.
Or three times that of a Knight Rider lighting pack.
And that's in the box.
That's down in the bottom of the trailer, yes.
Yeah. And so you have some wires that come out, and you don't actually have to access the batteries ever. You just connect the wires up to your solar cells.
More or less. Actually, it runs to a charge controller and load distribution system that I built myself as well.
Okay. You should do a website just about the equipment.
It would take a while, but yeah, it's a lot of requests on that.
Yeah. And you have the solar panels will have male Velcro on the back so you can stick them. You actually did try to ride with them. It didn't work very well, though, huh?
It worked okay. Mm-hmm. I just find, though, that it's more practical just to set them up and, you know, prop them up with water bottles to get the right angle and just relax and ride on the computer for a few minutes.
And you do it
a couple hours.
And so it'll charge while you're on your laptop.
Yes, they're big enough that I can run the laptop while charging the laptop battery while also charging the headlight battery all at the same time.
How much does all that weigh?
I don't know exactly.
It's a good bit of your weight, isn't it?
Well, the battery is about 2 kilos, around 5 pounds. Mm-hmm. The solar panels are about the same, actually, about 2 kilos or 5 pounds. All the wiring added up is probably 5 or 10 pounds just from the wires and the switches to control everything.
So that leaves you not many pounds for clothing and food. And how much room does that take up in your case in the back?
Actually, takes up very, very little space. I mean, the panels take up the majority of the space.
Did you ever think of, like, I need to shed some of my material goods here?
I got rid of everything else I owned before I left on the ride.
Yeah, but when you sat down to figure out, like, how much you're going to bring and how much power requirements you're going to have, you decided on the laptop. That's sort of a luxury, I guess, although we all appreciate it. We get to read your website all the time.
Well, that wasn't so much a luxury. That was almost essential nowadays. Mm-hmm. To be able to maintain connectivity from the road, communications, also pictures to, you know, capture all the photographs. I store them all digitally, digital camera, mm-hmm. keep on the hard drive. To lug around umpteen zillion rolls of film and try to develop them in Cambodia or in Vietnam would be a little bit more of an issue.
Right. And they probably have Wi-Fi in Vietnam these days, too.
That's what I hear.
We'll find out. Well, probably more than here.
A couple years till I get there, but yep.
And by then they will. So then it hooks onto the bike, and you've got... Tell me about the bike. What you've got... Well, just starting from the... I don't know how we're going to attack this, but... The frame. I guess you want to start with the frame.
Okay. Well, the frame, it's started with titanium. It's a super heavy-duty, extra-stiff, extra-strong, ultra-robust titanium frame that I designed myself. And outsource the actual welding to China. Huh. It's all the best things are made in China nowadays.
And what were you looking for?
Geometry-wise, what I wanted was something that was extremely comfortable and extremely stable. Mm-hmm. As simple as that. When you're going to be spending years on the road, you want to have a bike that just does everything perfectly with no problems. Durability and low maintenance are key. Fast handling and, you know, razor sharp cornering, those type things are secondary.
So it's sort of a, what would you call this frame? It's sort of a mountain frame?
No. Common misconception. It has a similar look to a mountain bike frame because of the fat tubes.
Yeah.
But it's actually what would be considered an expedition touring frame.
Uh-huh. Want to elaborate on that a little bit?
Expedition Touring Frame is essentially a bike that's built for extremely long distances while carrying very heavy loads over very bad roads.
Uh-huh. And it's got a long top tube.
very long wheelbase in general.
Yeah.
The wheelbase is, it's actually longer than a downhill mountain bike, but with a much lower center of gravity.
And your handlebars?
Handlebars are basically butterfly trekking bars. Mm-hmm. Comfortable, offer lots of handle positions, and it gives me, you know, places to mount things like a compass bell and computers and two water bottles mounted on the handlebars, the rear view mirror, and of course the handlebar box up front. And yeah, we'll get back to that in a minute, I think.
Okay, sure. And you have about 10 bottles of water. And I see you have some dog spray, some mace.
Oh, yeah.
Why do you have to carry that around, I guess?
Well, coming through a lot of places in the country, dogs aren't as well, shall we say, contained or trained as they are in San Francisco here. Mm-hmm. Many places in the country, people let their dogs run free. Mm-hmm. And these dogs just love to chase cyclists.
Right. So
pepper spray will stop them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, have you had to use it before?
That's probably my 10th or 12th bottle there,
really?
And I have a very good aim.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's...
I've sprayed literally hundreds of dogs.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Well, it keeps them from getting run over, though, because those dogs are going to keep chasing bikes until they learn not to chase bikes.
Yeah.
So without that negative reinforcement, that pain that they learn to not chase bikes anymore, they're likely to get hit by cars.
Right. Dogs feel pain differently than people.
Yeah. And I've actually seen the dog get hit by a truck that was chasing me. And So from the owner's perspective, or if I was a dog owner, and I used to be, I'd much rather have a dog get sprayed with pepper spray than get under the wheels of an 18-wheeler.
I'll go along with that. What about the wheels?
Wheels, I built myself. Not surprising. Yeah. Basically, they're very, very heavy-duty mountain bike wheels, essentially.
26 inches, right?
26-inch, because mountain bike style tires are available pretty much internationally right now. The biggest difference, of course, over a normal bike for road use is that I have disc brakes, larger tires, and on the rear, a roll-off internally geared rear hub.
How many speeds?
14 speed internally geared hub.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's pretty amazing. Okay, the rear triangle has to be really wide in order to accommodate all that, right?
Well, the rear triangle is actually a standard width for a mountain bike, with the exception of the sliding rear dropouts. I had to offset for that.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Kind of old-fashioned, old-school dropouts there.
Semi-old-school.
So, yeah.
They're vertical dropouts, but they're specifically designed for a roll-off hub. Oh, these are made out of titanium.
Oh, okay. You got a huge cable here for the electrical going from your box in the front. You want to talk about the box now?
Sure, we can get to the box right now.
Because it's sort of like a cockpit. This is outrageous. You know, this is like you get this whole thing in front of you spread out. You have how many switches? 3, 6, 9, 12 switches.
12 switches on the handlebars.
And what are those? This box is pretty big. What's inside of it?
Well, inside the box is basically three main functions.
Mounted where you put a basket, you know, right in front of the handlebars.
Yep, uh-huh. Right in the middle there. On the front of the box are the headlights, built right into it.
Uh-huh.
You can't get it off the bike, so they're no problem with theft right there.
They're obnoxiously bright.
Good.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, the headlights on the front of the bike. There's two taillights on the bike itself, so if I'm ever riding without the trailer, you know, I still have taillights on the bike.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, there's four taillights on the back of the trailer. All of those lights, the headlights, and there's three of those, by the way, are all controlled with switches up on the handlebars. Every single switch is a three-position switch. I have on, off, and flashing for all those lights. Now, that still leaves three switches up there. Those other three switches, two are load distribution switches. One allows me to switch from the dynamo to the battery pack.
Uh-huh.
The other one actually activates the LED lighting system. And the last one's a battery gauge.
Pretty amazing.
And inside the box has a little storage area, too. In there is where I keep my camera and my Wi-Fi detector and my tripod.
Okay. What other issues do you deal with when you're on the road?
Well, of course, weather is
one. Let's go back to that.
Yeah, and this gets on with a bike, too, while you're looking at it. It's one thing we left off that I consider almost essential on bikes are fenders.
Mm-hmm.
This bike doesn't have just fenders, but it has full wraparound stainless steel fenders with extra long mud flaps.
There it is.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, so you're a good person to ride behind.
Exactly. Well, except when I got the Bob trailer, because that has a little kick-up fender on it, so you'd still get road spray from that.
Yeah.
But when I don't have the trailer, it's a great person to be drafting as me.
Yeah. Yep. So, and you'll ride rain or shine?
Typically, I ride rain, shine, snow. It doesn't really matter
to me. What do you wear? I mean, just in general, what do you wear?
Depends on if it's World Naked Bike Ride Day or not.
But if you had to wear clothes...
Well,
do you wear bike clothes, or you wear a lot of wool?
I wear a lot of wool. Uh-huh. For me, cycling specific doesn't mean much. I still have some old cycling wear from back when I was a spandex warrior. Mm-hmm. I used to be that mentality. But now I'm, as I wear out products and various clothing, I'm switching over to all wool, all natural fibers, and a much more casual, laid-back look.
And something that keeps you cool in the summer and warm in the winter.
Exactly. Like my typical summer riding wear is swim trunks with an orange shirt. Uh-huh. Simple as that.
That's
not
how
orange jersey,
I first saw you.
Orange shirt.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And when it's raining?
When it's raining, depends how warm it is. If it's warm, I'll just get wet. And if it's cold, I use a rain cape. Yeah, kind of old school, European style, but it works great.
A rain cape, but you don't get much up spray because of the fenders. I guess that would work pretty
exactly.
well.
Exactly, yep.
Do you wear rain pants? Or?
I have them. I rarely use them.
Uh-huh. You carry them along.
Yep.
Yeah. You have a really nicely worn in, you don't see them this well worn in, a Brooks saddle. And people who don't know, most people on Bikescape probably know what a Brooks saddle is, but probably a lot of people buy them and immediately sell them again. So if you want to buy a Brooks saddle, go on Craigslist and just wait, be patient, because somebody's going to, they cost $160 retail, you know, list price, but you can get one for $30, $40, $50 because people are so ticked off at them because they're so hard on their ass. But if you do bear with it for a while, you have to put it on a bike that you ride every day. You'll get it. You'll break it in, and it becomes a really nice friend.
Yeah, I was going through saddles once every 6 months. Yeah. I was just wearing out saddles left and right.
Wearing them out where? When the rails would break? Or
no, actually, the actual covering would wear off from use. Uh-huh. I'm obviously a cyclist who has a lot of riding to do that.
Yeah.
And so I wanted a saddle that would be very durable. And I looked at the Brooks, and it was the longest-lasting saddles you could get.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, of course, concerned, like most people are, if it would be comfortable or not. But I quickly got it right out of the box. It was comfortable for me.
You don't wear chamois or anything?
No chamois. No, swim trunks.
No need.
Yep. Typical shorts or just regular pants even. I don't bother with any chamois or cycling shorts or any of that. And I just ride it every single day. And I had it about a year and a half before it was fully broken in. And then right after it was broken in, someone slashed my saddle with a razor blade.
Oh, drag.
So the one I've got on this bike now, which is also broken in, and this one's only about a year and a half old, and it was a replacement. I've broken this one in again.
So you still got 3 more years on this seat. It's pretty well worn in already, but it's got more years left on it. Let's just talk about the route you're following, because how did the route develop in your mind when you started?
Well, the route was kind of simple, actually. As crazy as this may sound, one, I'm extremely flexible on routing.
You know a lot about navigation from the military, so you learn. Did that have something to do with how you came up with a route, or does it really have no bearing on it? Or?
Well, it doesn't really have a whole lot of bearing. For the most part, it's pretty simple. If you go one direction long enough, you'll get back where you started.
that's the plan, huh?
Yeah, and the way I did the route is there's a number of places and sites throughout the world I wanted to see, mm-hmm. and I kind of drew a line connecting them together. And I'm sure I won't follow that exact line. I'm sure I'll vary a little bit here and there. But yeah. For the most part, I just connect the dots.
So what happened? You started in Asheville, right? The name of the town?
Yes, Asheville, North Carolina.
North Carolina. And you left town, and where'd you go?
Well, from there, I went to Chattanooga, Tennessee. Uh-huh. Went across the Smoky Mountains and then made a right turn and went up to Terre Haute, Indiana. Visited a friend up there. Uh-huh. That's almost due north. From there, went to St. Louis, Missouri. And cut over to the Katy Trail across the state of Missouri, and then dropped down into Kansas. Hooked up with the Trans Am bike touring route, which is one of the adventure cycling routes cross country. Mm-hmm. Followed that across Kansas into Colorado. From there, I ended up on the Western Express portion of the Trans Am route, which is actually kind of a coincidence. I didn't realize it at the time. And I followed that across southern Colorado and southern Utah. Made a little diversion into New Mexico and Arizona. And then when I got to Bryce Canyon, I made a little detour there. I ended up making an unexpected side trip to Las Vegas, where I ended up staying for 3.5 months.
You went to Interbike, huh?
I went to Interbike while I was there, although that's not the reason I ended up staying there.
Okay.
No, women will do strange things on the road.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yes. And then from there, after I eventually got back on the road, having gained quite a bit of weight, and as you would expect for taking a couple of months off a bike, then it was across... into California, near Death Valley. Rode through Death Valley, and then crossed the southern Sierra Nevada
Mountains.
What
time of year was
that? By this point, it was already the beginning of winter.
Uh-huh. That's a good time to be in Death Valley.
It was a great time to be in Death Valley. The temperature was almost perfect. It was not too hot, and by my standards, not too cold, mm-hmm. although a lot of people would have been really cold at night, as it was right around freezing. And after Death Valley, it was the Sierra Nevada Mountains, and then crossed into the central valley of California and worked my way up through the farmlands up towards Sacramento.
And where were you sleeping during? I should have gone. Where were you sleeping?
Sleeping, yes. That's one question a lot of people have. Mainly what I do is called stealth camping. It's based on backpackers leave no trace camping, mm-hmm. Only it's with a bicycle. And I make no fires, leave no trash. When I'm gone first thing in the morning, there's no sign I was even there except for maybe the small flat area where my tent was, unless I was using my hammock that night.
You don't start a fire. How do you do cooking?
I carry a stove. Uh-huh. Yep. I have a multi-fuel stove that'll burn pretty much any petroleum fuel, although I usually use regular unleaded gasoline. Cheapest stuff you can find, contrary to what the motorists want to tell you.
Huh, so you get it from
I go to a gas station, and when I'm completely empty, I'll hand them a dollar and say, fill up on pump number whatever, and I get change back.
That's amazing.
And that lasts me for 3 weeks.
And even at $100 a barrel, which it reached yesterday for the first time, it's still a bargain, huh?
Yep.
For what you do.
At $4 a gallon, it would equal a complete fill-up for me. Both my bottles combined would be about $1.
And that lasts you for how long?
About 3 weeks. And that's cooking 2 to 3 meals a day and heating water for showers.
That's great. Mm-hmm. And then your sleeping arrangements, your stealth camping, how do you have...
I carry
a
tent.
Is there a sleeping bag in here, too?
Yes, I have it in the trailer. I carry a sleeping bag.
Pillows, or you learn how to live without pillows by now?
I use my water bags. Uh-huh. I fill them with air.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Or I stuff clothes into a stuff sack and use it as a pillow.
All right.
But you have the sleeping bag. I've got the tent, and I also carry a hammock tent as well.
A hammock tent?
A hammock tent. A Hennessy hammock. It's the actual brand on that one. And it's a hammock tent. It has mosquito netting and a rain fly, except you hang it between two trees instead of cutting poles.
You can lie in midair in a rainstorm.
Yes.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, it's great in very humid and hot areas, especially, because you don't have that real mugginess that you get in a regular tent. You have some cooling effect.
And the bugs can't get you.
And the bugs can't get to you, exactly.
Yeah, we don't have very many bugs in California, but there's some places in America where it's not too...
Well, there's some mosquitoes in the Central Valley.
Yeah. So you got to California, you headed up the valley?
Yeah, headed up to Sacramento. And then when I got up to Sacramento, I spent a month over December, the holidays with my family. And then just a few days ago, hit the road and ended up here in San Francisco and actually started my ride, as crazy as that sounds.
Yeah, see, a lot of people would think that's the ride of a lifetime, but not for you.
No. Cross country, that was a warm-up ride.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that was nothing, because now I turn around and go east.
So San Francisco is what you're calling this the starting point of your ride.
I call this the starting point, yes, mm-hmm. Exactly, as crazy as that sounds.
So you crossed the Golden Gate Bridge the other day.
Yep, crossed the Golden Gate, and from here, I'm going to head south down into Mexico.
By way of, you're going to go down the valley again or along the coast this time?
No, I'm going to head down the coast this time.
Highway 1.
Pretty much Highway 1,
yeah. It's going to be beautiful.
Yep, especially in the wintertime, I think.
Yeah.
Yep. Hopefully there won't be too many tourists on the road driving like idiots.
And you're going to ride down, you're going to continue down past San Jose, past
Los Angeles,
San Diego,
and Tijuana, Ensenada, keep going south, about halfway down the Baja Peninsula. From there, I'll take the ferry from Santa Rosalia to Guaymas. And then from there, work my way up towards Texas, re-near the United States, somewhere along the U.S.-Texas border there. And then work my way up, probably swing back through Asheville again, say hi to some folks around there. Mm-hmm. And then continue on my way up the eastern coast of the U.S., up to Canada. And then from Canada, probably Halifax in Nova Scotia, I'll catch a ship over to Europe.
Uh-huh.
And make a lap around Europe, and then Middle East and
Asia. A
lap
around Europe? How do you say?
I'll lap around Western Europe, yeah.
Okay.
Spend a few months there.
France, Italy, Germany.
Depends how long my money holds out.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah, it gets expensive there for us Americans.
Especially now where the dollar is falling.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's like we're kind of like, yeah, we're the poor man of the world these days, aren't we?
We are. We're very much so. Yeah.
But it doesn't really affect you if you're on a bike too much.
It doesn't. I mean, food is the only real expense. Mm-hmm. And I live pretty cheaply on food.
Yeah. How much are you spending a day?
Well, I budgeted $10 a day. Although most days I spend between $3 to $7 a day on food. That's it.
That's pretty good. I mean, I think of, so that, what does that work out to? That's just $150 a month.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that's pretty good. And you've actually had people give you money.
I have.
You wrote in your journal that somebody gave you $50. Oh, you're riding across country. Here's $50.
Yes. It was great.
People treat you well.
They do. Yeah. And people's hospitality has been wonderful. There's been a lot of good people coming across the States, and they've just been really, really good people coming across. Mm-hmm. And I expect that to continue around the world, of course. I mean, one of the things I've found in my travels and other ways of transportation is that people are pretty much good people anywhere. Yeah. You know, 99.99% of the population are good people. It's just that 0.01% you got to keep your eye out for.
Right. But you're very well able to keep your eye out for them. They're right there in front of you. They're not behind the windshield or...
That's true. Yeah. On the bike, you can hear them coming.
You do. And you talk to people more, don't you?
Yes. On a bike, you're approachable. You're vulnerable, yet you're... I'm not sure how to phrase it exactly, but you're vulnerable yet approachable. You're not a major target for bandits because
people aren't afraid of you.
Yeah, they're not threatened by the cycle. Uh-huh. Exactly. Yeah. Yep.
And there's the curiosity factor.
Yep. Yep.
You get a lot of questions all the time, don't you?
Constantly. Yep. Lots of questions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So okay, so you're in Europe now. You're gonna do a lap around Western Europe.
Yeah, kind of a lap around Western Europe.
You're gonna skip over Eastern Europe.
Well, I'm going to head through the Middle East, north of the Caspian Sea. That's the plan as of now. Of course, it's all subject to change. Things might happen on the ground in various countries. It'll change the political climate at the time. Mm-hmm. And I may have to avoid certain countries or bypass other countries as necessary.
Or some woman might entice you to go to some place you didn't plan on going.
That's possible, too. Yeah. You never know.
You may find yourself in Hungary or who knows where, Russia.
I am planning to go through Russia as it is.
The Caspian Sea, right?
Yep. And a lot of the stands as well. Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Turkmenistan. I don't know if I pronounced that one right, but there's so many stands there. I call them the stand countries. Uh-huh. A lot of those, and work my way down into India. Yeah, I kind of make a lap around India before heading north up through Nepal into China.
That's going to be a bit of a climb, don't you think?
Going over base camp for Everest.
Yeah.
With a heavy bike.
You should be in shape by then.
Hopefully. If I'm not by then, I don't think I'll ever be.
How much does this whole rig weigh that you're riding?
Don't know. Don't really care. That's why I've got really low gears.
It's pretty darn heavy.
It is. It weighs more than I do.
The bike itself was... I picked it up. It's pretty heavy. The bike weighs a lot.
It's definitely not a fixie.
But you're used to it. Yeah. Okay, so you're going to go through the stands, through India, up over the Himalayas.
Over the Himalayas into China. And from China, head down into Indochina. That's the Laos, Cambodia, Vietnam, Thailand, that whole peninsula down there. Then work my way back up north into China again.
I've always wanted to ride the Ho Chi Minh Trail. You'll have a chance to do that.
I'll probably end up on sections of it.
I think it's a big freeway nowadays, but...
Probably is.
Yeah.
Hopefully
it has a shoulder, at least.
Probably is, but it has bikes prohibited, you know. From there, from China over to Japan, work my way up to the Japanese islands. And then from the northern islands to Japan, try to catch a ship over to Alaska. And then back down through Alaska and Canada and the Pacific coast back down to San Francisco.
You've got a time so that when you get to Alaska, it'll be summertime, right?
Of course not. I've been in Alaska in the winter. I've ridden a bike in Alaska in the winter. As long as you're prepared for it and know what you're doing, it's fine.
You think you might have to buy some more clothing or something along the way?
Absolutely, if I'm there in the wintertime. Yep. Yeah. But not just that, but clothing in general wears out. Mm-hmm. Most of my clothes I'll have to get replacements for on the road at some point.
And you have this laptop where you store your pictures and you also... Every day you upload a little journal entry to the website. What's the name of the website again?
Well, it's on crazyguyonabike.com.
Which is a website that specializes in allowing people who are touring to upload. So people can read and enjoy the trip vicariously along with you.
Absolutely.
Which I've been doing for the last week.
Yeah, it's created by Neil Gunton. He's the original Crazy Guy on a Bike. Mm-hmm. And he's created this fantastic website, free of charge, for cyclists to use. And it's basically one of the best, if not the best, bicycle touring resource on the web today.
It's a very nuts and bolts basic website. It looks like 1995, the HTML and everything just looks very...
It's very simple as far as the format of it. But just like a lot of those older HTML websites, there's a lot beneath it. That you have to really kind of get into there, and there's a lot of information there.
And you can dial into it on a dial-up phone since you're out on the road. You can, if you're out in somewhere in Mongolia, you'll be able to...
Yes, it's a dial-up friendly website, which is so rare nowadays. It's not loaded with graphics and advertising and all the things that you get on normal websites. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And you have, 98 pages, or maybe it's gone up since
then? 100 right now, actually.
Oh, yeah. 2 pages since you've been here. Mm-hmm. And so a daily website.
Basically, yes. I update almost daily from the road. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Pictures and text, so everybody should really check that out. It's pretty interesting.
It's almost an online book, kind of in between a blog and a book, and it's kind of in that range.
It could be published as a book one day. A little editing here and there.
It's in the works.
Yeah. So you're really well connected. But you're kind of alone most of the time, aren't you?
On the road, I am, yes. I wouldn't say I'm lonely, because there's me, myself, and I.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, I ride alone most of the time. Occasionally, people like to ride with me for short distances, and I'm completely fine with that.
And you've been riding for the last, since May. It's been summertime across America. It gets pretty darn hot.
Oh, man. Coming into Vegas was brutal. Absolutely brutal. It was about 50 degrees Celsius, or about 120 Fahrenheit.
So, to avoid the heat, you got all these great lights, I guess, and you're alone anyway, so you've been riding at night mostly, huh?
Not mostly. Most of my riding is in the daytime, but I do like to start very early in the morning.
About what time?
Depends on the temperature and the traffic. A good day for me starting at 2 a.m. or 3 a.m.
Right.
Yeah. Although most days I tend to get on the road right around sunrise.
Yeah, that's the middle of the night to me. I mean, yeah, and I get up early, too. So you're all alone, you're riding in the middle of the night. What do you think about, dude? I mean, I asked you this last night, you know, when I'm riding alone for a long distance, I tend to have, sometimes it's nice, I get a song going through my head in a circular motion, kind of a circular kind of song, and it just, sometimes it's annoying, sometimes it's nice, but it just sort of keeps going. What do you do?
I get bicycle engineering problems going in my head. I like to design bikes in my head, and I work out.
That's your music?
Yeah, yeah, very much so. I'm not a very musically inclined person. I have absolutely no rhythm. I'm completely tone deaf. I couldn't hold a tune if you put it in an Ortlieb pannier.
Hmm.
But, you know, engineering stuff, I understand, and it makes sense to me. So I can figure out frame angles and steering geometries and frame materials and ways to braze new lugs and stuff like that while I'm on the road.
Huh. So that's all going to pay off one day. Are you keeping notes or...
I am keeping notes on this stuff, actually, and perhaps one day I may go into business producing bikes. I haven't decided yet. It's a long road.
So you're planning on 3 years, but it could go longer or shorter?
It is what it is.
Yeah.
A ride of this length and of this nature, very rigid planning is not really the best thing. If you're going out for a week or two, you can plan every night out. But if you're spending years on the road, you really need a flexibility. It's got to be a lot of flexibility in your route planning and your scheduling, too.
Yeah, you don't want to get beheaded in Afghanistan or...
Exactly.
You
know, I mean...
You may have to go around.
Yeah, if something crops up, there's a hot spot politically somewhere, it's a good idea to go around it.
You don't have any expectations?
That is a very good question, actually. Yeah. What I expect from the ride. And you are absolutely right. I don't have any expectations. I don't know what the road's going to bring, and that's part of the joy of it. I'm very open, and I want to see what's out there and learn and just observe. And that's a great way to do it, is from a bicycle, because you're going slow enough to see things and yet fast enough still to cover large distances.
Right. Your first blog entry was about how you left work, you clocked out, and you just hit the road.
Yes.
That was it. That's how you left. You clocked out of work. You left straight from work. And suddenly that was the last clock you had to look at for a while.
Yeah, it was. And in fact, I had my watch that I've been wearing for years and years and years. I've always been very time-oriented. Mm-hmm. And I used to keep my watch to within 1/2 second of accurate. I had to use time when I was a navigator.
Mm-hmm.
And throughout the years, I've been having to use the watch for everything and always been driven by the clock. Well, suddenly, I found myself not wearing the watch. I didn't need it. So I took it off, and I wanted to figure out some way to ceremoniously, get rid of the watch and do something to it to destroy it or just somehow separate myself from that time factor.
Mm-hmm.
And I carried that watch all the way cross country, all the way out here to San Francisco. And along the way, I figured out the way to do it. And on January 1st, at sunrise, it went off the western span of the Golden Gate Bridge.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I'm still really married to my watch, unfortunately. I still live in the normal world.
But there's no more tan line now.
Yeah. So that's a big difference in your life.
It is, yes.
I mean, people live like you're living now for millennia,
and they do in many parts of the world still.
Yeah,
I mean, it's
people
time...
that, you know, it used to be one town had a slightly different time from the town down the road.
Yes, I mean, when the sun comes up,
just depending on what time the church said it was.
Well, that too, but also when the sun comes up, it's morning. When the sun goes down, it's night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a very natural form of time that people have gotten away from with electricity and
the railroads is what did it. Railroads, and you know, they just, so that, you know, the railroad came to town and they enforced the rules about what time it was.
That, and then of course electric light bulb.
People resisted it.
Mm-hmm.
And just like you are now.
Well, I'm not really resisting it. I've just cast it aside.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean much on the road. I mean, if you ask me what day of the week this is, I have no idea. It is today.
Uh-huh. And we bid adieu to Victor as he heads off into the dawn a few days later. I brought along the recorder, and it was a light rain the morning he left. It was 5 o'clock in the morning. I was on my way to work, and Victor was on his way to the first day of the rest of his trip. And I thought we were bringing along all of you on that send-off, but alas, the recorder was turned off. The little safety switch wasn't in place. So even though we were riding down Monterey Boulevard thinking we had 2,000 Bikescape listeners and a little virtual critical mass at 5 in the morning, we were only just the two of us. But he's off. He's on his way. And if you look at crazyguyonabike.com, check out his journal. He's had quite a few entries since then. He managed to make it all the way down Highway 1. The beautiful Highway 1 took some wonderful pictures, as you can see. And went through L.A., which sounds kind of hellish, and down through Baja, down to Santa Rosalia, where he took the ferry to Guaymas, just as planned. And last I heard, he was sleeping outside of a police station, stealth camping, with a broken Bob trailer. So he's waiting for a part right now. And we'll check in with him day to day, and maybe he can do Skype. We won't know for a while. I'm going to try and get in touch with him and see if we can do some Skype interviews while he's on the road over the next 3 years to check his progress. So farewell and good luck, Victor. Looks like we're heading into spring now, and lots of things are starting to heat up in the city here in San Francisco. The Bike Kitchen is having its tune-up class Monday, March 17th, 7 to 9:30 p.m. at the Bike Kitchen. That's at 1256 Mission Street at Lasky, the downtown part of Mission Street. And they meet every 3 Mondays in March, the 17th, the 24th, and the 31st. And they're limited to 8 people to keep it easy to work on. The class will be hands-on, so bring a bike and get ready to get greasy. And over the 3 weeks, it will cover what is included in a basic shop tune-up: installing and removing tubes and tires, fixing a flat, installing a brake and shift cables, adjusting brakes and gears, chain maintenance, chewing the wheels. And this is sliding scale fee for the class: $40, $40 to $80 for current Bike Kitchen members, or $70 to $110 for non-Bike Kitchen members. Although you can get a year-long membership with the class if you do that. So you can check out more information, and you can sign up at www.brownpapertickets.com/event/29554. Bikes, not bombs. Can you believe it's been 3 years since the Bikescape's been on the air, but 5 years since the war began. You know, if everybody had been riding bikes, enough people had been riding bikes even, we wouldn't have had a war in Iraq. But if you don't see the connection between bicycles and the war in Iraq, then you're listening to the wrong podcast. But there is a protest of the war on March 19th, and Bikes Not Bombs is leading their own contingent. They leave at 7:30 a.m., also at 9 a.m. and 11 a.m., bikers will meet at Justin Herman Plaza at the foot of Market Street at Embarcadero. You come take direct, real action against the fifth anniversary of the war in Iraq. For more information, you can check out www.actagainstwar.net. And in the same spirit of dissent, Chris Carlson is leading one of his now famous bicycle tours around the city. It's a Dissent History Tour. Counterpulse and Shaping San Francisco director Chris Carlson conducts a 4-hour historical tour of San Francisco by bicycle. Bring a snack and water and reserve your spot now. Reservations requested. You can call 415-608-9035. This is happening on Saturday, March 22nd, 12 to 4 p.m. Meet at Counterpulse, which is at 1310 Mission Street at 9th. This is a sliding scale. Again, $15 to $50. Let's see, what else have we got? Oh, Bike Ed, of course. I always announce this. Bird Hill has these wonderful Bike Ed classes. This one is happening day one, starts on Thursday, March 20th, 5:30 to 9:30 p.m. at the Jewish Community Center at 3200 California Street. There's four hour in-classroom courses teach the basics of safe and enjoyable cycling, including riding in traffic, necessary equipment, crash avoidance, legal rights and responsibilities, and it's open to adults 14 and over. You don't have to have a bike, but please bring your lunch. Note that this is day one course for the League of American Bicyclists Bike Ed Road 1 certification. Each class is free, but registration is required, so sign up. Don't have an address for that, but you could check out the website, sfbike.org, and check it out there. The night ride. I almost never ride on the night ride because it's Sunday night, and I, you know, having kids and family, it's not a good night for me to get out. But the last night ride was the fourth anniversary, actually the first anniversary because it was a leap year. But it was on a Friday night, and the 29th, a leap year night, and it was a wonderful ride. We duplicated the ride, the first ride that Nancy Botkin led the ride on 4 years ago, and we went through the Golden Gate Park, out to the zoo, had snacks out on the beach, even though it was freezing cold, but nobody seemed to care, and went back to the warmed up over at the beach chalet, and by the fire there, and had beer and French fries. Garlic fries, and it was great. We enjoyed it so much. But it goes back to Sunday nights. Sunday, March 23rd will be the next one, 7 p.m. You meet at the Panhandle. There's a big statue there at the corner of Fell and Baker. Put on your blinkies and your berets. Tonight we're going to see the sculptures of the new UCSF campus in Mission Bay. Bring hors d'oeuvres to share. No one turned away for lack of hors d'oeuvres, but you can contact Nancy at nancybotkin.net. I'm sorry, Nancy at nancybotkin.com, B-O-T-K-I-N, for more information. The San Francisco Bicycle Coalition has board meetings, and they're open to all members, and you can talk about what you'd like to do with the SFBC and mold the direction it goes in. It isn't just something that they do, it's something that we all do. The agenda is available. You can call Leah Shaham at 431-BIKE, extension 306, or write to Leah at sfbike.org. The Tube Times is the four times a year publication that comes from the Bike Coalition. They have a folding party on Wednesday, March 26th, 5 to 8 p.m. at the SFBC HQ, 995 Market Street in the 15th floor. It's time to get the April-May issue of the Tube Times out on the street, and the SFBC offices will be hopping with friendly folks, chatting, snacking, and folding away until the folding is done. So come on out and help. Dinner's provided. Bring your bike up on the 15th floor. You can get your questions answered by emailing Kate at sfbike.org, or just show up. Also, almost as important as the Bike Coalition is the San Francisco Bicycle Advisory Committee. They're the people. There are 11 members of the Bicycle Advisory Committee, each one representing a supervisorial district in the city here. And they advise the Board of Supervisors, our version of the City Council, how to proceed on various bike issues. And you can go and speak your mind to the Bicycle Advisory Committee. They meet once a month, and you can check out their website at sfgov.org/BAC. And their next meeting is on March 27th at 6:30 p.m. at City Hall, room 408 at Polk and Grove. Bert Hill is the chair of the BAC. So you can place an item on the agenda or request notice of the meetings and by talking to Bert. And his email address is sfbac7, Bert, B-E-R-T, at AOL.com. And also there's Critical Mass, of course, March 28th, Friday, 6 p.m. You meet at Justin Pee Wee Herman Plaza at Market and Embarcadero. It's not organized by anybody, endorsed by anybody. It just happens. and you make it happen. You're the leader. Show up. If you don't like the way it runs, take over. Be a leader. So I think we're going to call it quits at this point. I want to thank everybody for listening. There's many ways to get in touch with Bikescape. You can email me at bikescape@sbcglobal.net. You can go to the blog and see various links. Actually, Victor has sent me quite a few links regarding things that were mentioned in the interview. You'll find all those links there on the blog at bikescape.blogspot.net.com. Let me repeat that, bikescape.blogspot.com. And check out the links and all the past shows, and you can also leave comments. And I love when people leave comments. I like to get a little bit of a more of a community going on the blog itself. Sometimes there's even blog entries that have nothing to do with the podcast. So tune into the blog every now and then. You can also, how else can you reach Bikescape? Tell your friends about it. You can, I don't know how you're accessing me. You may be getting it through a link from your email. You may just be have a random sound file on your computer, but you can get it through iTunes. You go to the iTunes store and go to the podcast area and do a search for Bikescape. Or you could also go through Blog Lines or Google Reader or any number of those feed readers that are out there. You know the drill, I guess. Anyway, where are we? We're at the point of the show where I tell you to keep your head down, keep that rubber side down, and do what all bicyclists should do. You're a vehicle. You're out on the road. You have all the rights and responsibilities of other road users. So take the lane. Bye now.
Whisper it, even Bin Laden once drank America's cup, just like that election down in Florida. This shit does.